Hey guys, this is Reese, another episode of Built with Purpose. Today I have a very, very special guest that I know probably better than any of the others that have been on or probably will be on in the future, and that is my partner, Tommy Smith, the founder of SCA Construction. There is a lot of things to learn, a lot of funny moments to reiterate and go through, but Tommy, if you would start out just telling us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into some of the questions.
Tommy Smith, born and raised in the mountains of North Carolina, moved to Atlanta in May of 95. I did play football at Western Carolina University, grew up on a small tobacco farm, and got involved with a network marketing business that actually led me to the Atlanta area. Started off cutting grass, and I'm always, you know, raised on a farm, was interested in equipment. I say it like this, I grew up with Tonka toys and I never got over it, so always had an interest in, you know, equipment and stuff like that, but moved to the Atlanta business to because there's people and business here other than cows and horses. Like, I grew up in mountains in North Carolina, but, you know, started my career out here, jumped into business, started a grass cutting business, been through multiple different businesses since, all with a, you know, hands-on type of approach. But, you know, but that eventually led to SCA Construction.
So there's a lot of things in between the beginning and those statements. You know, your degree was in engineering. Why did you choose the construction field specifically? We've got a lot of people that are listening that are predominantly in construction. They might be office or in the field. A lot are considering leaving. Some are considering staying. But what made you go that direction? You had the option to go somewhere else.
Well, you kind of got to tell the backstory. So, you know, at 18, if a football coach comes to you and says, hey, you know, we're going to pay you to hit people and chase girls for 4 years, perfect, you've signed me up. What 18-year-old's not going to do that? So, but yeah, no, I got a full scholarship to play football. I went undeclared for a year and a half. So engineering was kind of a default mode. I had always, since birth, I think I came out of the womb and wanted to own my own company, start, you know, own my own business, chase my own dream, so to speak. But engineering was kind of a default. I was great at math. You know, I graduated with honors in college. Engineering is something I sort of fell into because, you know, how do you pick your college degree? What makes the most money on graduation? Engineering. And then I realized they're going to let me drive trains. And I was like, well, screw it. If I can't drive trains, we'll do construction. But no, construction sort of evolved out of, you know, my dad built the house I grew up in, you know, just grew up very hands-on, you know, as MacGyver mentality growing up. You know, everything we did was, you know, building barns, just farming, using heavy equipment, you know. So I developed a love for production and equipment at a very young age. And so, you know, upon graduation, you know, I started in the grass cutting business because it was just the lowest barrier to entry. But that led to building retaining walls, doing drainage, doing other products. If you're the guy that's cutting their grass, you're the guy that has the most trust with that client. Therefore, you can convey that into multiple other areas.
Right. And for a lot of the people that are on here that have owned a small business, maybe they work for a big company. I had a friend just the other day that works for one of the biggest construction companies in the Southeast, but he's looking to start something on his own, looking for a different opportunity, a little bit more financial gain. And as someone that has started several businesses that have gone over $1 million in sales outside of SCA Construction, have nothing to do with it, what is one thing that you've learned from those days of anywhere between the small businesses at that time to $1 million in sales to what SCA does now that you've learned that have been consistent? Like, if you had to give one piece of advice to the person that's starting or has a small business right now, what would you tell them?
Wow, huge question. First is begin with the end in mind. And you can't, if you don't know where you're going, then you're just spinning your wheels. You gotta have a vision, I guess you would say. It's hard to do that. But as far as I'm trying to mentally dial into the audience and say, what piece of advice would I give? The biggest piece of advice I would give is have a positive mental attitude towards what. That's the beginning of success, is a positive mental attitude. I've always taught this, the five basic steps to success is number one, decide what you want. Number two is decide when you want it. Number three is decide what you're willing to give up to get it. And number four is develop a plan, preferably with someone who has a vested interest in your success or a mentor or a coach or somebody, you know, if you want to find out where somebody's at, just listen to the five people they hang out and spend the most time with. But, you know, so develop a plan, and then number five, work your plan. So you've done a great job of that. You taught me a lot about that. You know, my plan was very much Tommy looking out, and I worked from the angle of what I knew, and I looked for people that knew things I didn't know. But, you know, we all set our own self-imposed limitations. And my limitations were very blatant. My first 15 years of business could best be described as blunt force trauma. You know, oh, it didn't work. Well, hit it harder. You know, back up and hit it again. So anyways, that I don't know if that answers the question or not, but you can peel back the layer.
It definitely does. And one of the things I was going to ask this later on, but I think it's relevant now. For all of the people that are working for the large companies that are making $80,000, $100,000, $150,000 a year, like really solid incomes, maybe they have families, maybe they don't, but they're in a really stable spot where they know if they leave, they can't just go back and get another one, you know, like the click of a button. And so for the people that do want to venture out and start their own business, the grass is greener on the other side. What would you tell that person? I guess if you had to give advice on how to make the decision, whether to venture out and start your own business or to continue building a successful career, because, I mean, if you make $100,000 a year, I mean, that's a 10% profit business at $1 million. That's pretty good and with absolutely no risk whatsoever. So I don't think a lot of people understand that, but what would you say to that person?
So the first thing I would say, well, before saying what I would say to that person, you brought up a thought in my mind. I revert back to a book that I read called The E-Myth. Yeah, it's called The Entrepreneurial Myth. And trying to remember the guy's name, Jay, out of California.
Don't come to me.
Anyways, great book. It's a little blue book, big E-Myth on the front of the book. But read it several times. But the best quote of that book is, most entrepreneurs aren't entrepreneurs at all. They're merely technicians that had an entrepreneurial seizure. And when you hear that, you're like, what is he talking about? But ultimately, he says it's the technician. It's the electrician that said, well, I'm way better at being an electrician than my boss. I know way more than that joker knows. So I'm going to go out and start my own business. Well, you may be good at that technical skill, but you know accounts receivable, do you know accounts payable, do you know bookkeeping, do you have clients, do you know marketing, do you know, so, you know, to own and run a successful business, there's a lot more components. And I would also say, who are you following? Who are you studying? What's the roadmap? What's the plan? You know, so I don't ever want to discourage anybody. There's not an employee at our company. Most employees at our company have owned their own business at one point. You know, a lot of them. I refer back to you attract to you what you are more than what you want. So as an entrepreneur, there's no way. I encouraged you to do all kinds of stuff before we partnered up. And I was ready to invest in everything. You know, I was so excited. I get excited about people chasing a dream. And under, you know, and having a realistic approach to that dream. So, if you have a good solid plan, some advice I would give you is find a mentor, find somebody who successfully won at the thing that you're trying to win at. Which you're the best example ever of that, Reese.
Thank you.
The second thing I would say is be realistic. Sometimes we look through rose-colored glasses at the future. And we set, here's a better way to set. Ask yourself, am I selling myself on doing this or have I properly researched it? So some people will come to me and I've got this good idea. And if I challenge them and they get a little bit bowed up. That way I know it's like, okay, you aren't looking for input. You were looking to prove something to me.
And on that topic, so one thing you've mentioned a lot before is the capacity for independent thought. And so when most people today, you know, you go on social media, I personally try and, you know, keep them off my phone for distraction purposes because there's 200,000 voices that have a good idea. And when you go through things, whether it's on Instagram or Facebook or your buddy that works the same company where it's the crab in the bucket syndrome where one's trying to climb out and the other's just pulling it right back in, and there's so many voices that you have to listen to, what advice would you give to the 25 or the 30-year-old that has a bit of success in what he's doing now and he's just trying to find the right person to listen to, whether it's the book to read, the person to listen to? I do believe that if you listen to too many voices, you're never going to get anywhere. It's just going to be confusing. But in a day and age where there are so many different inputs, how would you say to find the right voice and deem its credibility?
Well, I'm going to share my face.
You got the floor.
When you're looking for someone to follow, the first thing is you better look where they're pointed. So, you know, you got plenty of me too good advice, rah, rah, flash in the pan. You know, I did three things right. Now I want to sell my program on Instagram crap out there. So, you know, hopefully the people in this audience that we're talking to has enough capacity for independent thought to see through that, and you're not swayed by whichever way the wind blows. And so anytime I'm thinking that when I'm sharing a concept, the number one thing I'm doing is who's my audience? What am I looking to accomplish? So when you ask the question, what would you tell somebody that is looking for mentorship? I would say, pray about it. You know, God orders our steps. You don't have to believe that. You know, you can be an absolute heathen and still be in a situation. They're all biblical principles. So I'm not trying to force my viewpoint on you. However, there are spiritual truths in life that are spiritual truths. It's like gravity. If I jump off this building, I'm probably going to break my leg when I hit the ground because of the force of gravity. Well, there's certain spiritual, you seek and you shall find, knock and it'll be opened unto you. You know, eyes to see. There's so many different, you know, there's a lot of underlying spiritual truths that guide our actions and guide our thought process. You know, the sower soweth the word. You get in a situation, if you really want something, I believe you have to start sowing out your mouth what it is you want. First, you got to get a vision. Then you talk to people that you trust. Now, if you talk to your random neighbor at the cubicle beside of you and you're painting a vision of, I'm going to go take on Hades with a water pistol, this guy's going to look at you like a cow at a new gate and be like, oh, that's stupid, man. You ain't going to make no money, whatever. But if you're the person who seriously has a vision and you're seriously looking for mentorship, then start casting that vision. Sketch it out on paper, you know. Start to develop that vision and then put it on paper and ask God, say, you know, give me some word, lead me, put the people in my path. It says that you would order my steps. Give me confirmation this is a direction I should go, and then put the right people in my path. I'll step out on faith, but you got to put the right people to listen to.
And for the person that's beginning to go down that road, maybe they just haven't had any of those input in life so far. Maybe they've just been beat down for a long time. Maybe they don't just go, you know, straight to one source. But what beginner advice books would you go to?
Now that's an
easy place to start. So,
and you know, I'm not. The best thing that happened to me was as a young man getting out of college, I saw a network marketing business when I was 21 years old, April of 94. And I found mentorship because somebody asked me a really simple question. Tommy, you look to make any extra money? And I'm like, you have any more stupid blank questions? Of course I'm looking to make extra money. I was aggression going somewhere to happen. I was tired of we're poor, but we're happy. I was tired of, status quo. So I had a big dream. And I think when the dream is big enough, the facts don't count. So when you say, where would they go? There's tons of books. There's tons of, but there's also tons of noise. But some oldie goldies for me is Napoleon Hill. Anything written by Napoleon Hill. One of the first books I would start off with is Think and Grow Rich. Then that leads to Master Key to Riches. Another book that is absolutely unequivocally one of the best. It's probably the first book I ever read in business. It was, I just brain farted. The Magic of Thinking Big. And in that book, chapter two, first paragraph of chapter two, he says, I can quote it to this day. I read this in a deer stand at 21 years old, 31 years ago. I'm 52. Yeah, I threw the book out of the deer stand. I was so pissed that nobody ever told me this stuff. But I was reading that book and it said, people, go deep into your study of people and you will find that most unsuccessful people suffer a mind-deadening thought disease. And we call this disease excuse-itis. Look at even the most, at the average Joe, and he suffers from at least a mild case of. And he says, the excuse-itis, procrastination is a failure diseases, And so The Magic of Thinking Big is a phenomenal book. Read chapters 2, chapters 12, and chapters 13, and then go back and read the rest of the book. That's a secular perspective, but it is very much a baseline of getting somebody going in a direction. Master Key to Riches, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, cannot go wrong. Les Giblin is, these are oldie goldies, man. These guys did this in the 20s. Well, Les Giblin was a lot older, but Napoleon Hill studied Andrew Carnegie and the top wealthiest business owners of the world for 25 years, free of charge, and then developed a manuscript that was probably 20 volumes long. Cut that down in, and that was the birth of Think and Grow Rich. So if you follow successful people who've proven a path, you're bound to pick up on some key points. And then the one of the biggest things is develop a positive mental attitude. And when I say positive mental attitude, the first, when I'm sitting down with a young guy I'm coaching in construction that wants to be a foreman, or if I'm sitting down with somebody who wants to start their own business, or whomever it is, the first thing I tell people is, look, I go through the five steps to success. I repeat that five times a day, because if you don't know what you want, your goose is cooked. You're done. Game over. Why? Because if you don't know what you want, and I will say this, get a microphone, go out here on 285, put it, the camera in their face, stop traffic, and stick the microphone in people's face and say, what do you want? Or, I don't know. Do not be in traffic. Yeah, no crap. So do the rest of us. But it's a, and people spend more time planning a 2-week vacation than they did their entire financial future. I mean, that's offensive to me, be honest with you, that people are that ignorant about success in life and in business. So that's why I'm super passionate about helping people understand just God's laws of success. They're simple. But it's like I said, it's laws. Gravity is a law. Gravity is a natural law. God's basic laws of success. You don't have to be a, Bible thumping, fire breathing Christian to agree with those laws. You can be whatever. It doesn't matter what your religious background. I just can only speak from my perspective, and I don't judge anybody. I ain't good enough for that job, but. The law is a law is a law is a law. So it's hard to start down a path towards success and not understand success principle laws.
And banking on that, so there's probably going to be some people that maybe they make that $250,000 a year salary at the big company. They're doing well. They have a business that's profitable, that's doing great things. And you can make it quite a long ways with absolutely none of those beliefs, at least for a little while. But can you just explain? Because I feel like most people have gone hard times, I think more than not. And it's easy to ignore all that stuff. when things are going good. But can you just explain a little bit to the people that maybe you're in this situation now, or you have just the weight on your shoulders, the rubber meets the road, the cloud is over your head, it's raining, it is pouring, stuff is not going your way, whether that's personally, business, or anywhere in your career. Where do those values, lessons, and I guess tributes come in those areas? And how can they help support somebody through something like that?
Man, what a broad question. Go to www.sca.construction and my phone number's on. My phone number is on everybody's Mac. You know, I don't know. The very broad question. Obviously, you know, for me, it was the word, but I'll be honest with you, it's like reading to Charlie Brown's school teacher before I became aware, right? So sometimes people pick up God's word or the Bible, B-I-B-L-E, basic instructions before leaving earth. It is a handbook. I mean, it's God's handbook. And it says in there that the word became flesh and dwelt among us. So for me, I'm very visual, right? I'm visual. I love production because I love seeing the picture, and everything in the way of that perfect picture makes me mad. Huh. So I'm very visual. So when you ask that question about if I'm stuck, where do I go? You know, tell people to go to the Bible, but if they don't have a baseline of information, when I first started going there, honestly, it was challenging. It was a little bit, you know, the these and thous and the thus is. I was like, what? You know, and I grew up in a church my whole life, but I didn't. You can sit in a cross-legged in your garage and say, I'm a car, and you ain't ever going to be a car. So just because I grew up in a backwoods Baptist church where everybody sit in the same row, listen to the same dude for 22 years and nobody made a decision, I don't put those people down. I love those people. I love every one of them. But there was no positive I never saw change. So it should change. So I say that to say the Bible's where I get that. But when you say if someone's brand new, they're in, you know, their wood's wet, they can't get any traction. They're swimming upstream. They're, you know, and man, we live in such a crazy freaking world. It's great. People are so distracted by noise, they really don't understand. They're like a biddy in high weeds. They're just bouncing around, you know, they're like a little chicken but in high weeds. They can't see out for the noise and the clouds. So, yes, I'm going to point you towards God's word. Yes, I'm going to point you toward a church. But I've seen some churches do some stupid stuff. You know, church ain't the answer. This is church. Are you a believer in Jesus Christ? Absolutely. Well, I am too. He said, we're two or more gathered. I'll be in your midst. You know, let's serve him a cup of coffee. Appreciate you franging out with us, Jesus. We're having like our good turns. And we got positive confessions on the walls. This is good. But the point that I'm making is, if you are, here's what I'll say. If you're out there and you're like, one more lap around the mountain like the Israelites. We've been at this 40 years, boys. It sucks. One more lap around the mountain. Maybe the boss will recognize my potential this year. Maybe my wife will respect what I'm putting in, even though I'm not being respected. I've seen so many people hurting so bad. And that pisses me off. Satan cometh not but to steal, to kill, and destroy. And I want to encourage those people that you don't have to live in that. There's a way out. There's a path. But I can't tell you on this audio what the path is because I don't know where the person is. But call me and I'll help. Huh. You know, go find somebody. Here's the most accurate answer is go find someone who is not confused, that you respect, and that you would trust along with your wife and children.
That's deep. But it's true. I mean, it is
facts are facts, man.
There's no other way to say it. And I've seen us in extremely hard times. Yeah, we have been... I have seen you from the bottom of a dish with a half a million dollar piece of equipment stuck. It's about to rain. We are hundreds of thousands of dollars in, you know, when I say in debt, we're millions of dollars in debt, hundreds of thousands of dollars behind the credit card statement that was already due last month. and wondering if this is just going to be a big $500,000 claim, or is our customer going to sue us for damage this and damage that? And it's you and I on a Sunday, sweating, ankles bleeding, which we've been doing for the last 5 days.
Seven,
you know, not to, and then
I was there 2 days before you got there.
Yep. And there you go. And so going from that point now to where we're not out of the woods yet, we are absolutely, it's not like we've arrived anywhere, but, you know, we'll probably do, you know, not double, but pretty close to what we did last year. We have incredible people on the team. We have incredible new systems that are getting developed. The sun is shining, as you would probably put it. And in comparison to what it was like just a very short time ago, I think it's really easy for people to see that and be, well, that guy's always had it easy. It's always been good for him. The grass has always been green. And even though that was only about a year and a half to 2 years ago, it really wasn't that long ago at all. Take us back to where you were, let's say, 10 years ago. It's before you and I knew each other. It's before any of that. Yeah, the partnership was there. Before any of this existed, any of it existed to where you could turn off your phone at 5 o'clock and you have enough trusted people on your team to where you know things are going to get handled, things are going to get taken care of. What did it look like after so many businesses, I guess, in the traditional business sector? I guess take, I know you have a successful network marketing business outside of this, but take the construction industry, the service-based business industry. What did that look like 10 years ago, which isn't really that long?
No. We were doing, I'd have to look on the calendar. When I started SCA Construction, we hit over $1 million the first full year in business. I started in June. We did like 300,000 or 400,000 by December, you know, in 2012. When I say I started SCA Construction. I had lived through multiple other companies in the past, built a pond building business, built a landscape supply business, and multiple other things. But as far as SCA Construction, specifically in our, you know, earth moving construction, stormwater management business, 10 years ago, we were probably about $1.4 million annual gross accounts receivable. And I was really good enough to sell good enough to do enough. But here's the deal. I had good people. I've always had good people. I mean, but there's a difference between being a good human and being effective at where you're at in business at that time. So you got to get the right people on the bus. Then you got to get them in the right seats on the bus. So at that time frame, because I trusted my confidence in production, the answer to all things was, I just got to sell it. And then once I sell it, whatever I sold, we're going to work hard enough to make it profitable.
It was you, me, or the highway. Amen.
And it was, you know, a lot of long nights figuring out how we was going to make it productive. But one word, when I mentioned positive mental attitude, when you talk about being in the ditch, you know, and it was a rough week. It was a 90-hour week, digging in mud. It followed back in fashion. We're digging it out. You know, we're in the bottom of a sinkhole 30 feet deep, 20 feet below the bottom of the outlet control structure. That was a long-faced week. But the principle then is the same principle today. The foundation of a positive mental attitude is understanding in every adversity lies the seed of an equal or better, greater benefit. So either that's in your DNA and you're in control of your circumstances, or you're waiting on the success bee to sting you on the butt and hope something good happens. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. So let me say it a different way.
The foundation to winning in life is saying, I am in life. If you're on this podcast, go to your wife, put your feet shoulder width apart, look her straight in the eyes and say, honey, I am in life exactly where I chose to be based on my actions and my attitude over the last 5 years. And if you can't own that, if If somebody is the reason you're where you're at, well, then you need to go ask that bastard's permission to be somewhere else. You're stuck. I wouldn't be mad, too. I wouldn't feel hopeless if I had to go ask somebody else for permission for me to get out of my situation. So back to your point in those olden days, when we, you know, I was really good at sales. You know, I used to pat myself on the back, but
that's true.
I'm honest. I love people, and I'm blunt force trauma, truthfully honest with people. I know my God supplies all my needs here, his according to his riches and glory, not your stupid drainage job. Not that, you know, I'm here to serve you. I'm here to solve a problem, but I'm not willing to compromise my integrity to do something that you think should be done if I know it won't work. So I know where my source is and where the reality is coming from. So back 10 years ago, although we made a lot of top-end volume, our bottom-end profits sucked. In a lot of ways. Would make really good, really good. And then, man, Tommy was spread so thin, driving around 285 with his knee, topping up an estimate, drinking a coffee, eating a protein bar and an energy drink on the way to a job site. And I mailed it in on the estimate. Therefore, okay, boys, you know, we're not going to make any money. In fact, this will cost us $5,000 to be here for the next 4 days. But I told somebody that would happen, and we have to make good on my name because that's the only opportunity for us to get invited back to somebody else. So if anything, I protected our name at all costs, and I think that set a foundation for where we're at now. But during those days, man, it was in 2013, here's what I didn't account for. You know, you think, oh, well, the answer's more money, but there's a challenge. If you grow your company, you also grow your accounts receivables. It means you grow the amount of money you're waiting out. So if you want to grow by $1 million, you better have $250,000 in the bank to be able to fund waiting on the money. And it depends on your clientele or whatever. So during those early years of fast growth, one of the problems I had was, man, I would go to my network marketing company. I would write myself a bad check from my construction company, SCA Construction. I literally would write myself a bad check. I would go to Bank of America where I held the, you know, my network marketing company, and which it was doing good and financially solvent, but literally I would write into that company a bad check to get cash to make payroll for migrant labor, day laborers that I picked up at Home Depot. I picked up a guy one time, I didn't even ask him his name. I was on the phone when he got in the truck. I pointed at the truck, worked his guts out all day long, gave him $200 at the end of the day. I never knew his name. We never had a conversation. I just pointed at the truck when I was carrying pipe out of Home Depot.
And how long was it like that? Like, how long did that last? Trying to make payroll every single week?
At least 3 or 4 years. Well, it was really, really bad for a season of about 18 months. When I say really, really bad,
yeah,
I can look you in the eyes and tell you that, you know, 52 weeks in a year, there was probably 24 of those weeks that I wrote myself a mad check and I had to get paid on Friday to make good on the cash payroll check that I wrote to myself.
Out of those 24 weeks, what was the most desperate that you got? Just, you know, it's funny now looking back on it, probably not at the time, but if you had to pick 1 week, what was the worst one?
None of them were comfortable. I knew that we were going to win because in every adversity lies a seed of equal or greater benefit. But one of the funniest ones, one of the ones that sticks out right now when you ask that question, we're doing a job in Smyrna. I hired a guy named Mark Lovell and his son Luke Lovell, but great friends of mine. I love those boys. Mark, you know, while working as a salesman for me, went to college as of in his mid-50s and, you know, got out, pastored a church for years. I learned so much from him. But his son, Luke, was in the field, didn't have a huge amount of field experience, but he had a driver's license. So if everybody he's hauling don't speak English and don't have a driver's license, he's a huge asset, even if he don't know anything about what we're doing as a taxi driver. He was a taxi driver. Now, he's still in the industry, started his own business after work with me. you know, still great friends. But in that time frame, I'm running around trying to sell jobs. Luke's got these guys. They're on a job site. There's a guy named Henry who's still with us today. He's from Guatemala. He actually got his citizenship. He hasn't got his citizenship, but, he's legal to work here. He got his driver's license. Phenomenal, phenomenal young man. But I got Luke and Henry and a couple other guys on the job site. And I'm like, this has got to be done by 5 o'clock. I have got to take this check to the bank before 5 o'clock. Anything else, I don't care. Like, you know, if you get done at 4 o'clock, hey, man, hang out. I'll pay you. But this has got to be done. And I left Luke with an assignment. I'm, you know, stopped by at lunch. And this is a little landscape job. I'd sell whatever I had to sell. It was a necessity. It was an absolute necessity. They were a warm body with a check and a dream. And I was willing to paint whatever dream they needed in their yard so I could leave with a check and pay them boys. So I became very adaptable at helping people get what they want, see what they want, communicating that to them. But I'm telling you, I'm dropping by at 3 o'clock or maybe 2 o'clock. Tell Luke what's going on. I'm like, you good? You got it? These guys got it? You got 4 or 5 guys on the job site. We're limbing up some bushes, cleaning up near a neighborhood, you know, but you know, landscapers, they plant stuff too close together and a little bit of growth and everything's just out of sorts. So we're putting in some rock around some trees, xeriscaping. We're limbing up a tree, but that is a little ornament bush, like a cherry tree, slept right in the front yard. The wife loved it.
There was the fake tree.
She explained to me how much she loved it and needed to make it look more like a tree. So I'm like, oh yeah, this is Luke. Just cut these limbs off, put his hands on. You good? Yeah, you're good. Hand it off to him. Well, I'm hauling butt to get back so I can get the check. I know how far I got to go to get the mate. So I've got to like split in hairs. I've got about 18 minutes. So I've got like a 7-minute window. It's like, look, you just hold the pen. I'll move the check. You don't need to hear about your life. Don't need to hear about you. I was like, let's go ahead and write a check and then we'll figure everything else out. I promise you, I'll be here till we bench. But anyways, so Luke calls me. I'm flying down, coming back to the job site down Atlanta Road. And Luke calls me. He says, I got bad news. I said, what? He said, they destroyed your tree. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? They didn't. Man, it's simple. It just cut a couple of buttons. No, they cut over half of it. They destroyed it. What? Her favorite tree in the front of the yard? I said, is this salvageable? He's like, you can look at it, but no. I'm telling you, it looked like the Charlie Brown Christmas tree. It was a beautiful tree, and there was like 3 limbs left. They were in a mindset to cut it down. I don't know how that didn't get translated. Probably a language barrier. But, I was like, go talk to the people. They come out, and I'm like, hey, I know that was your favorite, but what do you think about crepe myrtles? Yeah. Painted the vision, told him he was going to give him an upgrade with no additional charge. If you go ahead and write the check now, you know, we'll have it done by the time. I'll go buy it on a credit card at Home Depot, come back with it on my way back because they're open after the bank is, and we'll be done here by 7 o'clock. But, you know, it's kind of a funny story, but man, that's life, man. You choose to win, and then you choose to do whatever it takes. But it wasn't optional because not paying those 7, you know, the 4 or 5 guys, you can't do it. I couldn't look them in the eyes and tell them they couldn't go home and feed your kids that night.
Good gosh. So, given that was the state not that long ago, 10 years ago, that was in, you know, what, 2015-ish, 2016, something like that. So, given that it was there. So you said you had around $1 million the first year in business. And for that time period, you know, between that like $1 and $2 million range, at least for the first, you know, 10 or so years of SCA. And, you know, I had taken a lot of advice. This is like a whole other podcast about how we met and a lot of the advice that I took in my own business before we kind of joined forces. And then I ended up buying in. And in that time period, so we have now over doubled in size, probably about tripled in size at this point. We are much more stable. We have good character people, similar to how you had, but the skill set's a little bit different. And how How would you say the lessons that you learned, I guess the grit, the thing, the homeowner that you cut down their tree and turned into a toothpick, we need to make payroll on Friday with a $2,000 check or $5,000 check. Now, you know, our payroll is very expensive. You can buy a nice new car every week with what it costs to fuel our business and just the staff. That's not including the six-figure premium for insurance. That's not including the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars a month in cash flow that we have to make as a minimum every single month to keep this thing going.
$28,000 fuel boot.
Absolutely. And so how would you say, although it is was a much smaller financial problem at the time, although it's as real as it gets at that size, how would you say going through that for such a long period of time before now, you know, being a part of a scaling business, you know, putting the pieces in place, how does that all coincide? You can't just go 0 to 100 million with no mistakes whatsoever. But what experience did that give you to lean on?
A lot of awesome mistakes. You know, some people fear failure. I embrace it and learn from. So new level, new devil. You know, wherever you're at, I've said this before, wherever I go, there I am.
Pretty simple.
It sounds cliched, but seriously, the thought process that got me here, another way to say it, you can't solve a problem with the thought process that created the problem. If you self-counsel, you're like, hey, I'm smart enough to do this, and you do the same thing over again, you're going to get the same result, you know? Or maybe you roll the dice, get lucky that week, but you ain't going to get lucky every week. So, a few principles I would say is at this level, the same mindset of, you know, walking on faith. I say all the time, you've heard me say this a million times, I'm not good enough to do all this. If y'all didn't have my back and I didn't wake up knowing he had my back, this wouldn't work well. I'm gifted in the area of engineering, construction, problem solving. I just enjoy problem solving. And I've got a lot of experience over 31 years, really since birth on a tractor. But basically, I bring that to the table. But ultimately, all the other things like, how am I going to financially put this together? When you were counseling with me, when you were 17 years old, still just climbed out from under mama's dress tail, I had your little band of merry men that you graduated high school with, and you were putting together a business, and I was coaching you. What's the first employee I told you to get?
The first one that you told me that I didn't get was a bookkeeper.
A bookkeeper. If you don't know where you're at intimately, your goose is cooked. Like, it ain't going to end well. So, and I messed that up for 15 years. That's why I say the first 15 years are blunt force trauma. I didn't understand that. And I'm not office leaning. Personality. I don't care how much I got to work. I enjoyed working. So I worked 10 times as hard to not have to walk into the office. I don't tie. These hands don't tie. And so therefore, I had to find the right people to serve in the areas that could help me in the areas that I wasn't good at. So that's how you go from, you know, $1.2 million and Luke became in the office and guys telling you about. Why? Because he could type. Because of his degree of business savvy? No, he knew like Microsoft Office, but he could type. That was his qualifications. So, did a great job for us. I love you guys. Again, he went on, learned a lot here, went on to start his own business, and he's successful still 10 years later. But the point is, you got to know where you're at, you got to know what you have, and you got to know what you don't have, and you got to go find it.
And so with that being said, so you were there for quite a while and, you know, Luke was the first office person, he could type and all that kind of thing. Now, I guess the management team that we have in the last few years.
Yeah, I'm leading. He was the first office person, but I did have a bookkeeper.
That's right. That's right.
I started out. Jane was my very first employee before I was on the books. I had screwed it up so bad so many times in the past, trying to keep up with it. Says, I dreaded tax season like I dreaded the plague, man. I did not want, I hated it. Because why? Because that's a skill set or a gifting that I wasn't gifted with. So I just avoided it. But it caused great pain and great anxiety. So when I started SCA, the one thing I did do right in 2011, when we organized under that banner of that name, I'm doing the same stuff, but post the housing crash, that's how we started back as SCA Construction. I started out with a good bookkeeper, and then we proceeded to put the right people in the right places to help understand. And I'll be honest with you, Luke and I, we had a whiteboard just like this. We'd go in the office, and it literally took me about one day, about every 3 weeks, to put it all on the board. How much is coming in? How much is going out? Who can you pay and who can you promise? Map out a plan of what Luke was going to carry out in the office for the next 3 weeks, 2 weeks, or whatever. And then I was back to what my passion was let's go build stuff. So it ebbed and flowed. So I don't know if it answers your question, but ultimately having a vision, having a confident understanding of, here's another way to say it, my zero. I was good at not dying. So when I would get in the office, I'd be like, if everybody pays me today and I pay everybody that I owe, where I'm at? How much is left over? Is there any left? So my snapshot, I guess you would say, for the longest time was like negative 50, negative 100, negative 25,000. You know, it fluctuated south of zero for a long time. So what does that mean? Well, you got to have good vendors. You got to spread out the love. You got to be able to do quick return work. And I was just good at mapping out what I had, what I didn't have, and going and selling what I didn't have. So not the best business strategy, blunt force trauma to a degree, but it worked, and I had more fun than you could imagine. We had a blast and got to where we were making really good money. I was drawing good money from it, but because of my, I don't know how to say this, because of my not trusting my own business savvy understanding at a bigger level, I guess you'd say, and I really at that time didn't have a mentor, I'd kind of grown to the level my local mentors kept out in construction. So if you're looking at your peers and you're both at the same level, who knows how to get to the next level? Probably not them. So I'd sort of capped out, but I was looking for, I was capped out at a place to where I can skate. I was pulling money off of the business, investing in real estate, doing some other things, enjoying lifestyle a little bit, because this first 5 or 6 years, it was tough. It was super tough. So when we started making a couple hundred thousand, you know, I pulled quite a bit of money out of the business because at that time frame, I knew if I died today, it was going to go away. So I needed to make sure that my wife and children were secure.
Absolutely. And I think to go into what we've, you know, what we've got now and what we've implemented since we've been a partnership and where that is now, I think it's probably a whole nother episode. And so to circle back around in terms of the first, you know, 25 years-ish, I guess, of your career with those 10 businesses, with the last decade before that we just talked about, for the guy that's just listened to this, he's about done with it, and he's still deciding, man, I'm not really sure whether it's a good idea or not to start or to try, or maybe it's a decision just to pursue the career that he's got and make the most of that. For the person that's leaning more towards the employee route, how can he be entrepreneur within a company? We've tried to create an environment here for that, for people to be successful, and that'll be another episode. But if you're at another company, it's not SCA, it's not what we do, it's not the environment that we've condoned for people, what would you say for them to go do to take the next step to be entrepreneurial within their own company, create a situation where they can get a raise and create a little bit better of an opportunity for them at the company they're at now?
So I love what our business developer, Rich Hummel, who is new to the team, 3 months. We're sitting in his coffee shop, for God's sakes. What an amazing guy. But I love his, I'm going to steal his terminology. I'll give them credit for it this time. From now on, I'll take personal credit for it. No, but he literally is like, you are in control of your own destiny. You are in control. You chart your own career. So I say that, say, with us, per se, if it's somebody else in a different career, but ultimately, money is nothing but a measurement of your value to your fellow man. So if you can learn how to be more efficient, more effective, learn how to be, there's tools out there to learn from. You just, expand your horizons, grow. An apple's either starting to get ripe or it's beginning to rot, but there's never sit right here. If you are that guy that was frustrated and tired and lost in the weeds, it's because you're stagnant. You're not aiming at the next thing. It's hard to have a positive mental attitude without a definiteness of purpose. So if you know where you're going, if you know whose you are, who you are, and where you're going, then ultimately, those are some questions you got to answer. But back to the entrepreneurial thing, in our company, I will say, and you coined this, you were like, I was like, man, the best way to have a big company is have a bunch of, how do you have a big company growing fast? Have a bunch of little companies growing slow. And by that, I mean, give the guy responsibility to allow more people to sell stuff. The reason people don't have their own business is because they don't have enough money to invest in all the equipment. They can't, quote unquote, sell the farm and stay alive, pay their bills, feed their kids until they do enough work to get the income coming in. They usually can't have enough cash flow. So how do you do that within our company? We're like, look, start here, get a game plan, map up the next thing. We have, what'd you coin the
that's an account manager.
Account manager, yes. Obviously, I'm not very corporate-y.
Yeah.
So that's Rich's department, if you're listening to this. But in our company, if you're a brand new guy on the, there's a clear map for you to go from brand new guy to a lead, a second lead, then to a lead, and then to a form. It's a clear path. We have a map to where you can continue to grow and take on more personal responsibilities as you learn and grow yourself. So you own your own growth, meaning you're not stuck in a position. All entrepreneurship is solving problems, right?
That's pretty much.
He who solves the most problems wins. So in our company, if you're the guy that's being told what to physically do, then you're solving very little. You're offering your sweat, but not much more. But if you have the capacity for independent thought, you offer more help, well, then you can solve more problems. And the more problems you solve, I believe you should be rewarded more. So entrepreneurial within our business means is like, look, man, you can go through the ranks. You can learn how to do this. You can be an account manager. I want everything, every fiber of my being, I want you to be a successful account manager on our team, making $125,000, $150,000 a year or more. Hey, we develop the bonus chart. It's win for us, win for you, level playing field, clear path. I believe in eat what you kill. And really, eat what you kill is the entrepreneur mindset. I don't know if that answers it.
No, I think it does. And the thing is, we're still developing all that stuff ourselves. But with that role, that's probably, if you're listening to this, you can go to your company. Maybe that role isn't defined. The account manager position isn't really in that situation yet. Maybe it's a small business. Maybe it's a big business where it's more of a, hierarchical org chart where that's not even a possibility. But nothing is ever stopping. I don't think you've ever been frustrated when an employee comes to you with a plan that he's going to do to make more money for the business and take more responsibility.
That's mug. You'd love that. Let's jump ships to paint the picture a little bit clearer.
With 3 minutes to spare.
With 3 minutes to spare, if my son comes to me and says, Dad, I want a bicycle, I'm going to say, great, keep your room clean. Anytime somebody comes and says, I want something, to a leader, leadership is influence. If you know what they want, you can lead them where you want to take it. So the greatest thing, the greatest noise, the greatest compliment that I can give from an employee is like, I want to make more money. Praise God. Let's map that out.
Let's do it.
Hey, you win, I win, mama wins. Let's go.
Never be afraid to ask that question. But this has been awesome. This is absolutely not going to be the last one. There will be probably hundreds of these in the future. There's more to unpack we've got time for. But if you guys have any questions, comments, or concerns, please let me know in the comments or send me a message. And we'll be happy to make a video, a podcast, or answer any questions that y'all have. But in the meantime, thanks for listening and have a great day.